from my local village here in Villa Grande. But before we get started on the show today, I'm going to do my official responsibilities, appreciate the underwriters, and make a public service announcement. First up, we thank SolarWorks for supporting Cows Radio. From the beginning, SolarWorks has encouraged Cows listeners to support local businesses, producers, and providers. Remember, a healthy community depends on a strong local economy. SolarWorks giving people the power to make a difference since 1986. Solar electricity is even more affordable with federal tax credits. So for more information, visit SolarWorks California, solarworksca.com, or call 829-8282. Next up, Cows Radio wants to thank Sonoma County Gazette for their support. Gazette is 100% advertiser supported and free to readers. Print editions can be found at almost 800 newsstands and local businesses from Cloverdale to Petaluma and Sonoma to the coast, reaching approximately 100,000 readers online and in print each month. Their focus is on local news with writers contributing from all corners of the county. They can be found online at SonomaCountyGazette.com. And lastly, Cows thanks Rick Shubb at locally owned and operated Shubb Capos. Shubb has been providing musicians around the world with industry standard capos since 1974, 2 years before I was born. They pride themselves in quality, durability, and preserving good tone on instruments utilizing their capos and slides, and are well known among top professionals and hobbyists alike. Find out more about this venerable Sonoma County company on their website, which is shubb.com. HUBB.com. And then lastly, I want to make one public service announcement. This is from St. Philip Rural Food Distribution. For those in our community in need of nutritious food, you're invited to the St. Philip Rural Food Distribution. They provide fresh local eggs, fresh produce, milk, cheeses, meats, and fish, bread, food, soups, and canned goods. It's held on the second Tuesday of every month. Next distribution's 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. on February 11th. It's in a St. Philip's Church parking lot, 3730 Bohemian Highway in Occidental. For more information, you can leave a message at 707-408-2650. Appreciate St. Philip Rural Food Distribution. Again, welcome. I'm Colin Mutcher. This is Remembering Ourselves. Each week we have a guest and we're exploring their relationship to music. I've asked each guest to come in with songs from their early life before they chose their own music, songs from their coming of age when they first started to really fall in love with music, and songs that represent their music of today. And today I've got Barney McGrath.
Yep, that's it.
Barney McGrath, who's originally from Manchester, England, but has been in Villa Grande for the last year or so, and also has his own radio show on River Theater Radio 95.5. Don't say that. He's a proper DJ of some great stuff we'll talk about. But before we jump into the conversation, I want to kick it off with a song on vinyl that Barney's going to play that is... sounds like it's foundational.
Yeah, this is one I tried to describe to Colin earlier on as the alpha and omega of this whole situation. So yeah, I'm going to let the gentleman introduce what's going to happen right now. But this one, vinyl from 1985. Don't Watch the Crackle.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
Don't run back inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for. thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Well, show a little faith, there's magic in the name. You ain't a beauty, but hey, you're alright. Oh, and it's alright with me. You can hide beneath your covers and study your pain. Make crosses from your lover's throw roses in the rain. Waste your summer praying in vain for a savior to rise from these streets. Well, now I'm no hero that's understood. All the redemption I can offer, girl, is beneath this dirty hood. With a chance to make it good somehow. Hey, what else can we do? Tonight we'll be free. All the promises will be broken. There were ghosts in the eyes of all the boys you sent away. They haunt this dusty beach road in the skeleton frames of burned out Chevrolets. They scream your name at night in the street. Your graduation gown lies in rags at their feet.
Live at the Roxy from 1975,
that one was recorded. That's taken off the Bruce Springsteen, the East Street Band Live, 1975 to 85. LP box set.
That's the choice. Well, I'm here with Barry McGrath. He's my guest today on Remembering Ourselves. And he told me that that was like foundational. He even considered making the entire set today Bruce related. His first child is named Bruce. So give us the context. I mean, where are you when you first heard this song? Are you like a kid in Manchester? Like, what's going on when you first heard Bruce?
Yeah, first up, big up Bruce. Of course, Bruce McGrath and Bruce Springsteen, and of course Lewin and Alana, all the family, bless up. But yeah, Bruce Springsteen completely foundational for me as far as music that made an impact on me. So 1985, as I said, that vinyl, I believe it came into my life in 1986. I'm not completely sure because I was born in 1981. I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. But all of this early music, foundational music stuff comes through my dad. And he was the one who really showed me what loving music was like and like how that can be something important and how that can be something that points you and guides you in your experiences and your relationships and your, you know, just your life in general. And the way that started for me, the one that really sticks, there was multiple tapes that my dad would give me over the years. You know, he'd give me, you know, my dad was a blues, rock and roll, country guy.
Mm-hmm.
Real serious music guy. He died 2 years ago. Rest in peace, my dad. Graham John McGrath, legend. But massive musical influence on not just me, but so many people that came into his life. And one thing that was definitely very prevalent at his funeral a couple of years ago was not only me talking about Bruce Springsteen for the whole time, but was everybody else was just like, yeah, you know, he would just casually like hand out CDs and tapes to people. You know, he was one of those guys who's like, oh, give this a try. Completely dismissive.
That's something that probably people who are younger than us don't really remember of that time of like, it really was passed around. Like you would hand actual objects each other. And tapes were a nice form for that.
Absolutely. Which is kind of partly why I wanted to bring some records into the studio. I mean, I'm a big record and tape and CD guy. I don't do well with Spotify. I find the, or streaming platforms in general, I find the like option of everything too much.
Yeah.
I like to look and I like the tactile and the physical and, you know, I like the all full senses involved in my musical experiences, always have.
But your dad basically was that kind of guy that like literally was having passing stuff around.
Totally. I mean, I mean, this is kind of off topic, but yeah, he created some like this series of legendary Christmas CDs, which he would like give out and completely random people he would meet years later down the line and be like, oh, you're
that guy that gave me the Christmas CD.
They're like, oh, some, you know, somebody passed this to somebody who passed it to me, and you know, blah blah blah. My family listened to it every Christmas. It was like that kind of thing. But like tapes and tapes he would give to me. And one, I guess it was probably 1986, he made me a tape called Bruce Springsteen Bean Selection. I was called Bean, Barnaby Bean, when I was a kid. And track one, side one, was that song we listened to, Thunder Road, that version, the just the piano and Bruce. And that, there was lots of other songs on the tape. Obviously, it's a 90-minute tape. I still have it. One of my favorite things in the world is that tape. But I was hooked, immediately hooked.
Huh.
I'd heard a couple of things. I'd heard Born in the USA, which had come out a couple of years previous. And the thing that's carried it with me, you know, I was hooked immediately, and it's something to do with the like unashamed romanticism and storytelling and grandiosity, and that, yeah, it just completely pulled me in. It was the complete opposite of Stockport, which is a suburb of South Manchester where I was growing up. This like other world that was going on in the music of Bruce Springsteen.
Or it like took you away from the place
just
that you
like,
were.
Well, it just like, it, my, that became my, I don't know. I don't know whether my like fantasy world, but it was a way of like reconciling and understanding, I guess like serious emotions as well as fantasies and like, ideas about the world, and you know, it was becomes a context that you like put your experiences in, right? It's like this as somebody who's like talking about stuff that I have absolutely no idea. 5 years old, like what? 5, 6 years old.
Yeah, I can't even remember what I listened to at 5 years old. I mean, that's amazing that you even like tapped in that early to somebody like.
But it was the sound as well. Like, was the I'm not joking. Obviously, like I wasn't like thinking about it in these terms when I was 6 years old. It's like, this guy's rocket.
Yeah, you just liked it. Liked how it
felt.
Yeah,
and it was powerful and it moved me. And it, like, yeah, I think, know what
you
it
know,
was.
Bruce Springsteen does have a particular way, you know, with the way he tells stories and the emotion of his expression that is, you know, it's even when it's just raw like that, like voice plus piano, you feel it in a way that not everybody you feel.
But it's, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's also, and it's also been a thing that I have chased my entire life. You know, I was trying to figure it out before we came in here, but it's definitely like I'm deep in the double figures as far as times I've seen him live.
Wow.
Somewhere around the like 14, 15 times. You know, this is an important person to me. And the relationship has not always been simple. It's been problematic. You know, we've never fallen out.
You and Bruce.
Completely. But, you know, there's at points where I've been like, you know, come on. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, I'm not going to get into my like deep, intimate relationship with Bruce, but every time I start to like
not be as into him.
I don't know. Like, I can't fall away because he just, just a moment. Like, for example, I was listening to what I would consider quite a terrible and really cringy 2-hour Howard Stern special that he did pre-election. And it was basically like two old dudes who used to be kind of like edgy and cool.
Bruce and
Howard Stern.
And
Howard Bruce was never edgy, right? Don't get it twisted.
But this like, before the election this year?
Yeah. And, you know, he was in the studio with the band and they're playing songs and it's like really staid and really painful to listen to. So like, tell me about how you came across this idea for this song. And it's like, well, Howard, I'm glad you asked me that question. And it's just like, oh, God. You're making me really not want to enjoy this. And then at some point, he plays this song, I'll See You in My Dreams. And I'm at work bawling my eyes out.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, fine.
tell me more about like, so are you the only child or how many kids in the family?
Oh, sorry, there's three boys.
And are you oldest, middle?
I'm the middle boy of three. Big up Dens, my big brother, and Stuart, my little brother.
And your dad is giving you this CD, and there's, you know, is there...
It was a cassette.
It's a cassette, sorry, thank you. And is there anything else during that period of time besides Bruce, or is it all Bruce?
No, there was multiple other things. I had a tape of, like, 50s classics, so it had, like, Fats Domino, Leader of the Pack, Buddy Holly, that kind of thing.
But what I think is interesting about your story that's different from some of the other ones that I've talked to is, like, other people, because of what your dad did, which sounds like he had such a strong relationship to music where he was literally like, he knew you personally, he gifted you specific songs, you know, he like really intentional.
I mean, I remember a conversation that I had with him where, I don't know, for whatever reason, I think maybe I was just singing Born in the USA, not having any idea what, just sounded cool to me. I've late, you know, this is the thing with... Sorry, that's bothering me. This is the thing that's also something to do with Bruce Springsteen, right? So those songs over the... I'm 43, 40, just about to be 44. Over those like 40 years of listening to him, so like those songs have grown in meaning and understanding and sincerity and relevance to my life. Over a very long time.
But they mean different things now. They meant 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I mean, at the time, like, I didn't understand. Like, when Born in the USA came out, I didn't understand what that was all about.
Yeah, neither did I. I remember that song. I didn't know it was about it.
But I just thought he was like, I'd seen it. I think we had a VHS as well. We had a videotape of Bruce Springsteen. And I'd seen the video of, and I didn't understand that there was like, they were cutting between him, like, on stage and loads of Vietnam vets. And like gravestones and stuff. I just thought it was like kind of cool. I didn't really underthink about it. I was just like seeing this like sweaty man shrieking on stage and be like, yes,
right.
This is cool to me. But then like years later, it's like, okay, this is actually one of the most powerful protest songs ever written, possibly. Right. Totally. This is an incredible piece of songwriting.
Yeah, I'm curious to, if your dad gave the same kind of music to different... I'm thinking about my own children. I mean, Nico is like now 9, Ellis is 6. And already I do perceive like certain directions that are like slightly less... You know, they're more interested in certain types of directions of music already. And I do see myself sometimes like being like, oh yeah, I think Ellis, I think you'd like this one. Or I think Nico would like this one. But I'm curious, in your family, like, did your dad kind of give different music to different, or you, or is it more just like he just generally gave stuff to all of you guys?
I'd say more there was like the general like supportive, it was more like supporting music in general as an interest and as an art form, you know. He wanted us all to play music as well.
And what about mom? Is she in the picture at all?
I mean, it was a little different. Like, my parents separated when I was very little. There was a kind of a different situation there, like my home, like with mom. So we live with mom every other weekend with dad and my stepmom, big up Granny Annie, of course, Yorkshire grandma as well, big up. And so we're every other weekend with my dad. And I don't know, I guess it's different. I don't know. I guess this is kind of an irrelevant aside to go into all of that. But yeah, I'd say like, as far as like music being prevalent and like part of everything that we were doing, it was at my dad's house. That was when it was really, you know, he was in a band, always in bands growing up. So that's also like part of the early influences of music for me, as far as like music you're not choosing, right?
Totally.
Would be like going along to my dad's gigs. He was in a band for a long time called Diagnosing the Blues. They were all psychiatrists.
That's hilarious.
Doctors and I don't know if they were all psychiatrists. They were doctors and psychiatrists. Anyway, they're all medical professionals who played in this kind of good, who played in a good time R&B band called Diagnosing the Blues. And
that's hilarious.
Yeah, my dad was in it and my stepmom Anne was in it and a bunch of other gang. And we would go to shows when it was appropriate.
Yeah.
And loved it, you know, and there'd be recordings and stuff like that. They were, you know, they were good at what they did.
Yeah.
And those...
Yeah, there's something about seeing a family member play music that's different from just listening to music on the radio. In my family, they weren't in bands. Like, my mom and my grandma were actual singers. So, like, we would sing and I'd be like, they were actually pretty good singers. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt the feeling of singing with family was really cool when it happened. But it didn't happen that often. But I can imagine having your dad, actually going to a show where your dad's on stage playing. That must have been awesome.
I mean, it was... after a certain point, it was excruciating.
Oh, right, like, when you're
awful.
Older.
Yeah.
You're embarrassed of your father.
Obviously. He's in there, like, hamming it up and, like, doing the, like, Chuck Berry duck walk across the stage and, like, what?
It's embarrassing, yeah.
Yeah, he was, but, you know, he didn't care. He was unashamed, like, loved it.
That's,
you know,
cool. Well, is there any other songs that you want to play? What's the next ones you want to play?
Okay, so let's do you want to do the Ewan McCall tune?
Yeah, sure. Let's play that and then, and then give the context.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so this is called The Manchester Rambler, Ewan McCall.
Snowden, I've slept up on Croden, I've camped by the Wainstones as well. I've sunbathed on Kinder, been burned to a cinder, and many more things I can tell. My rucksack has oft been my pillow, the heather has oft been my bed. And sooner than part from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all me pleasure the Hartmoorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday. The day was just ending and I was descending down Grinsbrook just by Upper Tor, when a voice cried, "Hey you!" In the way keepers do, he'd the worst face that ever I saw. The things that he said were unpleasant. In the teeth of his fury I said, sooner than part from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler, I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all me pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday.
That's the Manchester Rambler, Ewan McCall. Tell us about it.
So, very foundational for me as a young person and growing up was an organization called the Woodcraft Folk, which is kind of hard to sum up. The best way I know how to describe it is kind of like a left-wing socialist alternative to something like the Scouts.
Where, like outdoor adventure stuff, but has
yeah, so it was called the Woodcraft Folk. It came out of the labor movement.
And was it all UK-wide?
It was in the UK, and also there was sort of different versions of it across Europe.
Got it.
But yeah, so I was involved in that from very young, just post toddler kind of age, all the way through until 18, and one thing, musically, so we would do things like we would camp and we would do outdoor stuff. We would, meet every week and do various activities. And it was generally, it would be like social conscience, environmental, and, kind of left-wing political based stuff we would be doing.
Right.
But it was also a bunch of kids. So you'd be playing silly games, romping, whatever.
Right.
But something that we always did was that we would gather in a circle and we would sing songs.
Hmm.
And there was a Woodcraft songbook, still exists. And in that songbook would be songs like This Land Is Your Land, Woody Guthrie, various Pete Seeger songs. And that song, the Manchester, various Ewan McCall songs, and that song, Manchester Rambler, because I was in Woodcraft Folk in Manchester, that was a song that we sang a lot. And we did things like Ramble, we go up on Kinder Scout, which he talks about, and Snowdon, which is in Wales.
Right, so it was really relevant. It was very relevant.
It was part of what we were doing, and I didn't know at the time. It was just a song out of the Woodcraft songbook that we sang, right? Yeah. And then later on down the line, it's like, oh, I fall in love with Ewan McCall, famously married to Peggy Seeger.
I don't know the story. He's in the scene.
He's from Glasgow originally, but he grew up in Salford, Manchester, and wrote various incredible songs that he's not necessarily credited for. Like, for example, Dirty Old Town, which is written about Salford, became a huge hit for the Pogues, etc. But incredible artist, songwriter, and one of the like seminal people of the folk revival of the 60s, really.
Yeah.
Kind of pre the big hitters, but
My mom had somebody that she loved that I just recently learned about named Donovan that I'd never heard of.
Never heard of Donovan.
I've heard the songs. Once she started playing, I was right. I've heard the songs, but it's like an example, what you're saying with Ewan McCall, where it's like, if you weren't in the scene and you weren't deeply educated like I was, like I knew Bob Dylan, I knew some of them, but I like didn't go deep ever. So I didn't actually know these like greats, that actually are like huge part of the whole community. It's like, you do have to do that extra level of work to get to some of these voices. If it's just, you just go top line, you miss a lot of really amazing stuff.
Yeah. Which, so that was it. The interesting thing about Ewan McCall, interesting to people who care like me, is that he was not, he would sing traditional songs. He was a proper folk singer. And some incredible, I urge anybody listening to go and listen to his version of Tam Lin, which is completely seminal. But he also wrote an enormous amount of songs, and they were often topical, like that. The Manchester Rambler was a very topical thing. There was a huge clash going on between landowners and people who wanted the right to roam. And that was a big topic that Woodcraft cared about.
Hmm.
Woodcraft folk cared about the right to roam on.
Yeah, is that something? I feel like that might be something unique to England, because I remember when I lived in the UK, there were these cool like paths that you could walk through people's property.
Exactly. Yeah.
In a way that I was always asking questions, because as an American, it's like private property is so intense, where it's like, don't get off my lawn.
Are we going
to
get shot?
You can put up fences if you want, but it's like not cool to go on. But in UK, it's just safe. For those that don't know it, there's like a rule, right, where it's almost like allowed and encouraged that there are these paths, public paths.
There's what is known as public right of way and public footpaths, that when property changes hands, if you've got a public thoroughfare through your property, as protected, it's going to be there. There's nothing you can do about it. It's
part of it. Well, so then talk me through the next day. So this is kind of the early days. And then, you know, you're maturing. I don't know if it's, you know, the equivalent of high school or whatever, or college or whatever. The, you know, what age are you starting to be like having a stronger point of view, and you kind of have more independence from the stuff that you're maybe influenced from your dad, and it was really your own path?
Yeah, well, I was definitely very into music from a young age. Like, I really cared and was proud and felt identified with the music that I listened to.
Right from the beginning. So it wasn't like, even though it was maybe from other people, you from the early days. It was
it's difficult to kind of separate that, but I guess probably, you know, I'd probably put it around the like early teenage years. I mean, the next song is from I would probably have come across this in 92 when I was 11, and I remember again a tape getting passed around school. So I had just started secondary school, 11 years old, and there was a tape getting passed around of this album called Nevermind by this band called Nirvana, who I'd never heard of. And it was a copied tape. I don't know where it came from, but it was getting passed about and people listening to it on their tape Walkmans. And everything changed again. It's like, okay, this is different.
I love the song you chose, because I did have a similar experience with Nirvana and Pearl Jam to a certain degree, like when those guys first became really popular. But that song, you know, if you had asked me, it's Drain You is the song. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it, but then once I played it, I'd heard it. But let's play a little bit of it so people can remember the feel.
Yeah, listen. I mean, I think with all of the songs, probably apart from the instrumental ones that I've picked, definitely listen to the words time.
Yeah, okay. Drain You, Nirvana, from their you know, foundational album, Nevermind.
One baby to another says I'm lucky to meet you.
So tell me about that. I mean, when you was that the song, or was it just the broader, the whole album?
No, it's the whole. I mean, it's the whole record, really. But it also then the whole. You know, I am a committed Nirvana fan anyway. Kurt Cobain, I think, is another figure that was really important, and I remember. I mean, obviously, I remember like discovering Nirvana, and then I remember again getting. I don't even know how it happened. I think I got a phone, because this would have been 94. I got a phone call on the landline before I got left the house to get on the bus to school.
When he died?
From my dad.
Oh, wow. Your dad called you.
Kurt Cobain's dead. And I was like, nah.
There's no way.
He's like, no, he is.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact context for it, but that was heavy when it happened.
It was wild.
Yeah.
I actually had, so that was eight. I believe it was April 94, I think. It's either his birthday's April or he died in April. I can't remember which one it is. Anyway.
So I was like, that means I was like 18. Is that right? 76? Yeah, so yeah. It was my like senior year of high school maybe or something like that.
Mm. But yeah, I had a ticket to see Nirvana for the first time in Manchester coming up a couple of months later.
So you never saw them and you were about to see them?
No, and I had, I think, saved up and spent, I believe, £12 on a Nirvana ticket, which was a lot of money back then.
Totally.
£12, and then obviously the show never happened, and I don't know if it's one of my life's great regrets, but I definitely do regret it now that I took the ticket back and got a refund.
Right, I needed that
£12, but yeah, obviously at the time I definitely did. As a 13-year-old, it was like, well, this is important. But yeah, Nirvana was something that really changed. Number one, it was a thing that I was really into. My dad didn't like,
right? Yeah,
so that was important. Not important, but you know, that was
distinctive.
I mean, he cared. Like, he liked that I liked it, and it was something that. But he didn't really, you know, it wasn't something that he was going to listen to.
Yeah, with those bands, I felt that. And then later I felt that with hip hop, where it was like, my parents did not get it and they didn't like it. Mm. And I did. And it was like, just, it was defining in that way. It's just, yeah. It defines how you're different from them. You're also very similar.
I mean, I'd already like plowed that furrow pretty heavily with stuff like Iron Maiden and Metallica. And my dad really didn't like that stuff either. But, you know, me and my brothers had discovered we could go to the library. And the library had CDs that you could borrow for nothing, and we could take the CDs home, burn them to tape. I'm sure the statute of limitations is done.
We all did that. That was the best part of.
But then you had it, and it was like, so that's what we used to do. You know, whatever we could get that was cool from the library. But yeah, Nirvana. Kurt Cobain is somebody that I think was really important. As far as like somebody that made it more so even than like bands like Soundgarden, Pearl Jam. I like them. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Blind Melon was a big one as well.
Yeah, I like them.
But something about Kurt Cobain and the way he operated was like, personally spoke to me about like, it's okay to feel how you feel and it's cool to feel how you feel. It's cool to be kind of, I don't know, like weird's not the right word, but it's cool to be like awkward and not necessarily
fitting in.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's like classic teen stuff, right?
Totally.
Like, it's not like I was particularly awkward. I had plenty of friends and like I was, no, you know, I was cool. But
there were certain parts, I don't remember the exact lyrics, but there were certain lyrics in some of those songs. For me, it was the Unplugged album was where I like deeply listened to the lyrics. I liked the original album, but I also listened more and I heard more of the lyrics in that.
This is something that we can get into. No, don't get me wrong. I'm very much into the Unplugged record. I think it's an excellent record, but I was frustrated at the time and remain frustrated to this day that I personally think it's due to Kurt Cobain's mental health at the time, which obviously it was
relatively
he was dead months later. Like,
yeah, it was really close.
Soon. Weeks later.
Wow.
I don't think it was like 2 months later, like 8 weeks later, something like that. Anyway, he was felt really unconfident in his songs in that context. And that's why he did, you know, David Bowie, Lead Belly. He brought the Meat Puppets up to do their, you know, he's like trying to do everything but sing his own songs. And the one that really, really, really like brings it home, I mean, the Lead Belly song is unbelievable. The In the Pines on that record mm-hmm. is nuts. But Penny Royalty.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Which is the one on that record, you know, the Am I Gonna Do This by Myself?
Yeah, I remember that moment.
That one.
No, it was, you could tell there was major stuff happening.
Yeah, and he was just kind of, everybody's just like, yeah, you're gonna do it by yourself because that's how he rehearsed it. He's just like, really doesn't want to do it. Huh. But he does it anyway, and it's like, oh my God, this is an incredible moment captured, but it's also really awkward.
And sad. I mean, when you think about it, yeah, some of those lyrics are about, there's some of those that really are just like,
Penny Royalty is like more or less about committing suicide.
Right. Like there's quite, like, there's even
it's quite brutal.
What was it, maybe All Apologies? Some of the lyrics of some of them, I'm just like, oh no, maybe that one, it's like, I don't have a gun, whatever. There's like stuff that's he's saying, like in hindsight,
yeah,
you're like,
I swear
is
that
this
I don't
related?
Have a gun, yeah.
Yeah. Is it related in the, you know, the
that's
in the,
Come As You Are, that one.
That's Come As You Are.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, incredible record. Kurt Cobain, still remains to me one of my heroes.
Yeah, no, he's a great, great, great songwriter. I agree. And beyond that, what else is happening in this time? Is there any other? I'm curious when you get to reggae because we haven't even talked about that yet.
Oh well, so we need to do a bridging. We're going to do a bridging stage to reggae. So the way that I came to that, which is definitely a big part of me and big part of what I'm into musically, is rave culture, dance music, rave culture is really through that. Discovering that through like hardcore drum and bass jungle in the mid 90s. So now, you know, yeah, we're pushing forward to like 94, 95, 96,
mm-hmm.
you know, still a young teenager, but like, again, tapes are getting passed around. People's older brothers are listening to this, that, and the other, and they filter back down to the school.
Right.
And
do you ever, is there actually any gather, any real life, are you going to any of these like late night things or no?
Not yet. I mean, but yeah, I mean, again, statute of limitations, but, you know, there was a certain point where, yeah, we became, myself and a certain choice number of individuals became active.
Right.
We became activated and would go to things, but yeah, that's a little bit later, but like the idea of not going to, you know, going to a club, seeing somebody play what was at the time vinyl and dub plate, vinyl and so like acetate, one-off special records, essentially unreleased, that became a fascination and a inspiration to me. And over time of going to, you know, see people DJ and listen to the music, it became more. Anyway, let's play this. Let's play a song, okay, and then come back. Let's play. Let's play Renegade.
All right, this is Renegade.
It's the man like Ray Keith.
Ray Keith playing Terrorist.
Bye.
All right, again, that's Terrorist, Renegade Ray Keith. If you're just tuning in, this is Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. I'm here with Barry McGrath, and we're on his musical journey. We're kind of in like the teens moving into young adulthood. After Nirvana, we heard that track, which is kind of like in the drum and bass scene of Manchester, then moving into Bristol.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ray Keith's a London guy, but yeah, he was definitely a big deal and still is, still going strong. Big salute to Ray Keith. But yeah, that tune is a foundational tune for the kind of crossover between what would be called the rave and jungle, hardcore rave to jungle kind of sound, which I'm not going to get too into the weeds with the like definitions and BPMs and all that kind of stuff. But jungle music is hardcore, and jungle music is something which is very, very dear to me, and is something that I DJ. Big up myself, the Cheshire Set, the Northwest Hardcore Ruler, of course, Wellington Scratchmaster Techno out there in the world.
Right, because that seems like the biggest development is you were attracted to the scene, but you also were attracted to the people that were actually DJing, and you became a DJ.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just loved everything about the and this is going to bleed into the reggae thing. I just loved everything about the like setup, speakers, loud music, dark, and it was exciting. It was like, it was thrilling. Like, I can't think of another word for it. It was dangerous. It was scary at the time. You know, yeah, we're talking yeah. Young.
You're in a place where you're not really necessarily supposed to be.
Yeah,
cops might come.
You're underage.
Right.
There's people there. Like, we would definitely, you know, we would go to these, you know, drum and bass nights, jungle nights, and it would not be cool to go to the bathroom on your own
because it was dangerous.
Legit dangerous. No, you probably wouldn't get beat up because you'd give up your stuff, but
people would take your things.
Yeah, take your things. But it was exciting. It was like absolutely thrilling, and like that combined with, you know, the high quality dance drugs that were going around at the time, it was an absolutely electrifying combination.
Totally.
And it's something that's never really left me. I mean, the drugs have definitely left, but the music hasn't. Like, it's something that I still love and still regularly will stick on and have like a huge, you know, I've a load of vinyl like that.
Totally. Yeah, it's funny how that's true. I do think that's true probably generally. Like, people who have experimented with all various types of drugs, like, talk about like it unlocking a kind of, you experience something. It's almost, I sometimes think about it like studying abroad and going to a different country. You experience something when you hear a different language or you live with a different language for a significant time that's like, wow, I didn't know that was a thing, or I didn't experience that in the similar way that sometimes with different things, especially, and in music is just such a, you can tap into the music and it's an embodied experience sometimes for people.
It's just another tool to put you out of yourself, right? Take yourself out of the way of the experience, right? It's just another tool to do that. And there's lots of ways that people do that. Some of them are damaging, some of them are not.
Right.
And, but when you can put your ego, your whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, just let that go and just
let it go and just be in the experience. That's something incredible that can happen. But yeah, definitely like dance music raves, that was really, really a thing. And it's something that I still, not that I'm raving anymore, you know, I've got little kids, but
yeah, and then when I first moved to the Bay Area, I remember there was like people doing like morning dance things that were kind of attempting to be in that direction, because we always, whenever we're young, we always think late night, sketchy places, all that, what you just described. That's my stereotype too. But it doesn't have to be. You know, you can still generate some of these things like in the daytime sober with some people that are going for it. And that's,
yeah, right.
I remember when I first came to the Bay Area, I sort of mocked it a little bit because it's so classic, you know, Northern California, but it was, but it's, you know, people do it. So how'd you get, and then did you find like a reggae scene?
Okay, so the thing with jungle especially is that it essentially is, in at its essence, it's reggae. It is dub sound system music is what it is. So reggae bass lines, reggae samples
are throughout, they're completely
ubiquitous. And I discovered so much reggae and like dancehall music through samples that I'd heard originally at raves and or in, you know, on Jungle Records or on the radio. A bit radio was a big thing as well, like listening to pirate radio, massive deal. And then I guess you'd probably, like, at this point transfer to move into Bristol from the, you know, suburbs of Manchester, for university, but also because there was a big drum and bass jungle scene in Bristol and big sound system culture and bass. I mean, these days they call it bass music, bass driven music, right? But that's where I properly fell in love with reggae above everything else, and, you know, started to DJ a lot myself and do the radio a lot myself. And yeah, that's really when I started to get into doing that. And yeah, it was definitely through, you know, through dance music that brought me there. But then it's like, it's a whole world of experience. And the first time that I experienced a proper dub sound system.
You're talking about the actual hardware, like it's the right setup, is that what you mean?
No, you talk about a sound system would be a specific group of people with a specific group of
speaker boxes. Oh, it's almost like a band.
Speaker boxes.
It's like the combination of the people and the band and the music.
Their specific equipment, their specific exclusive music that they would have.
Right.
So no two sound systems, but to the connoisseur, no two sound systems plays or looks or sounds the same. And that's what's cool. One of the amazing things about dub sound systems, right?
Interesting.
So for example, Abashantii doesn't sound like Iration Steppers, doesn't sound like Channel One. To the untrained ear, maybe, but to the initiated, no. This is different experiences. They play in different exclusive music on different sounding boxes and doing it and presenting it in a different way. And the, like, core root of all of these, I mean, people would argue it, but Jashaka is the one, you know. Rest in peace, Jashaka. Died not long ago, but he's really the sound system that for almost anybody who has seen him play is like, okay, like,
that's
that,
the one.
This is it. This is like, it's that thing that hooks you in, you know. It's that Bruce Springsteen tape that it was for me back then, but it was like, oh my god, this is like a next different kind of experience. Okay. Like, I've never.
So I'm looking at the clock and I'm realizing we're about like 8 minutes away. So I want to just, let's think about, you know, a track or two to play that kind of brings us closer to the current moment. But I'd also just love to hear, you know, I know that you've been a DJ of the show for a long time, and that's one part of it. You're now. But is there anything else you want to say about kind of your relationship to music now? You know, nowish, like since the pandemic or since you lived here in the States, like anything that you want to say about that before we play whatever you want to play?
Well, I mean, I had a strange period where I didn't have any of my records here because I just moved out here, and it was probably a 2-year period before the records made it. And when they did come, it was like, oh my God, this is incredible. You know,
you're back.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. And just, you know, spending a lot of time, you know, being here for a longer time and starting to make some links with other people musically in the area has been really cool.
Did you come straight to Northern California, or were you somewhere else in the States?
Yeah, no, I moved straight here. Okay. End of 2017.
To Petaluma?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then obviously having two children now, and them kind of starting to discover music in their own way, and like not wanting to oversee them constantly, and like, you know, I have things that I would like them to like, but I'm aware that you've got to give it time, you know. But yeah, seeing them just enjoy a song is one of the most rewarding things that can happen. Whether it's good or not is completely irrelevant. To see them like shock out and dance to something, or just like suddenly you see their like face change and it's like they're like listening to the words, you know, that kind of thing is like, I don't know, it's indescribable how, you know, for somebody who loves music and has had so much like support from music throughout my life as something that I've leaned on for reference, for emotional support, to like see that potential in your offspring is like,
yeah, no,
you're,
yeah,
you're going to be all right, kids.
I had a moment last year or so. I remember Christy was away. It was me and the kids. Adeline was there too, and John Barons was there, and we were like, suddenly Nico's playing the keys, Ellis is like banging on some fiddle, and Adeline's like doing some kind of drumming thing. But it was like, I turned around, I was like, are they actually just jamming out together? It was like they were actually playing and they were into it. And I was like, oh my God, this is the dream. Like they're just having fun playing music. Like you said, there's something so magical when you see that raw, you know, they're unfiltered in a way that I think a lot of adults are not as well. Mm-hmm. You really see the humanity of like they're genuinely either lit up or excited or interested in a way that we're not. Well, let's. What do you want to play to close us out? We've got about. I think we could play a little bit of a song, and then we'll close us out.
We're gonna do that Christine Miller tune.
All right.
So this is a tune which it's. I was trying to like figure out something that I could play that would sum up a lot around the like kind of sound system scene, reggae, as well as like dance music, Bristol, the Bristol sound. This is these guys, DJ Strider and Digi. Some friends of mine from Bristol, alongside a great artist called Christine Miller. And this one is Rob Smith, also from Bristol. His remix of this very, very beautiful devotional song. So yeah, let's have it.
All right. If we don't come back, I just want to say thank you, Barney, for joining us here on Remembering Ourselves. So this is There's a Love, Dub Chasm, Christine Miller, RSD. It's funny, right? I feel like when I was talking to my brother about doing something, he's like, we can't talk for an hour, you know? It's so easy, easy, right? Yeah. I mean, so, especially if you're filling it with tunes. It's, I mean, I can see like what you do I think really fun, because then it's like the music is the center. You're loving the music, and then you just jump in and have fun with whatever like, you're talking. It's like minimal, but it's you're so good at it.
That I talk too much.
Oh, really?
I don't give a fuck. I'm just like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, the way I feel about it is like, well, how much talking is there on your radio show? Oh, you don't do one? Well,
yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Though at times it may seem that there's no love, no love at all. When you hear the things that mankind do. So caught up in this world, the fall from grace begins, and we all know the wages of sin, but it seems prophecy it must fulfill. Chance and